This is the Emerging Women Podcast, where we become inspired to live and lead from the truth of who we are. We're creating a new paradigm for power that includes the feminine perspective because the world needs it. Hello and welcome, Emerging Women listeners. We have a treat for you today. I'm here with Christy Bells. She's the president of her own business, Empowerment Coaching and Consulting. And she has been in the business of helping women to actualize their true potential through her coaching practice, through her business, through her role as a co-creator of TEDx Cherry Creek Women here in Denver, Colorado. She's also been involved with a lot of shift training. She's a Brené Brown Dare to Lead instructor. She is well-versed in the root cause system, heart math, and a host of other techniques and practices that help to actualize our true consciousness, both as leaders, but also as women just living. And she's written a fantastic book. The launch date is, remind us, I think it's available now for pre-order.
It's we'll pre-sale give you on Amazon, yes. And it's the launch pre-sale. Date official is October 18th.
October 18th is the launch date. That's 2022 for those who are listening to an archived version of this podcast in the future. I'm speaking to you. I am so excited about this book, and it is such a treasure to be talking about second chances. The title of the book is, Oh God of Second Chances, Here I Am Again. And I love this title. I, you know, used to work at Sounds True, a publishing company, for 11 years. And we always knew when we landed on a title of gold, and this is one. And maybe I will start by introducing Christy. I'd love for you to share the second title, what you really wanted to title this, because I think it's fascinating.
Thank you for that. It makes me laugh every time I hear the title. But it really should say, Oh God of Second Chances, Here I Am Again, for the 25,000th time, the gazillionth time. It's over and over again, right? Second chances. You never stop.
I love that. And I laughed so hard when I read that in your book in the introduction, because so many of us can relate that, we fall, we pick ourselves up. I mean, that's life. Mm-hmm. So if you could start with, I know you started your career journey before coaching in advertising. Yes. And I'd love for you to tell us your journey there, how you pivoted, what gave you the courage to start your thought leadership business. It's not just a coaching business. You're really in the business of all of the thought leadership that helps to amplify women's voices and to step into the truth of who they are. Mm-hmm. And I'd love to know like how that journey came to you from the beginning until now. Of course, you don't have to tell us all the details.
But yeah, not the details. You have to get the book for all the details.
All right? The details are in the book.
All the down and dirty. I put it all out, not all of it. Actually, I think sometime I'm going to have a title of, Oh God, a Second Chances. Here's what I'm going to tell you, but I didn't tell you the first time, right?
Right.
So I grew up in Kansas City. There's a lot of Kansas City theme in the book. I'm a big fan of country and Western music and cowboy boots and boys in tight fitting jeans and all those things. So growing up in Kansas City, I had pretty humble beginnings, and I didn't go to college out of high school. It wasn't something that was considered, or even I was even aware that I could go to college. So I started working two jobs, restaurant jobs. I always worked and stayed busy, and I ended up getting a call one day from a girlfriend who was working at an ad agency, and she said they were looking for help. And I said, okay, well, I'll go over. So I'm going to date myself because I don't know how else to describe this, but I basically was like a Girl Friday when I entered the agency. I did a little of everything, right? Literally like drawing on acetate maps and running to the post office and doing all these things for this ad agency. And as time went on, the agency grew. It was a very small company when I started. And our founder found the niche in a market, and we just grew exponentially. So I grew with that company, and we went from 3 million in sales to over 40 million in the 8 years that I was with them. And I went from that like administrative Girl Friday position to a director of sales. And I was killing it. I mean, I was in New York. I was all over the country. I was traveling. I had a house, I had a car, I had everything you could possibly imagine for a young mid-20-year-old in the 80s.
Yeah, and we would call that crushing.
Right. Crushing it.
Crushing it.
Right. Everybody thought I was crushing it, right?
Oh, yeah. Big time.
Yeah. So but I wasn't happy. You know, the reality was I had really a lot of experiences in my young life that I didn't really know what to do with. I lost my dad at 19. I was doing crazy stuff. I was making really bad decisions. And I frankly had too much money to I don't know what happened, but my mom of all people told me about this little church in Kansas City. Mm-hmm. And I started going, and there was hardly anybody in this little church when I went there, like 12 people. And then this amazing minister came, her name was Mary Omwake, and she just crushed it. I mean, really crushed it. And I really tapped into the idea that, you know, that I was okay. And that this faith, this was a Unity faith in Kansas City, which is where Unity is based. I just got it. I just, you know, I grokked it. And I was so blessed to have so many amazing teachers. You know, she would bring in the likes of Chicken Soul for the Sun, Mark Hansen, trying to think of all the thought leaders that would come through the Unity movement in Kansas City that I just, you know, in mid-20s, I got exposed to. And so that really was the beginning of my spiritual awakening and my desire to serve in a way that I do now. One of the chapters I talk about remembering, and my value is love, serve, and remember. And I got that from that little Unity church in Kansas City in my mid-20s.
Mm. That's a thread that we could go down, is the practice of remembering. Uh-huh. That is such a deep practice.
Yes.
But
yes,
we won't go down that road because it'll get esoteric, but I love it.
Yeah.
Okay. And then, so you were discovering yourself, you were kind of just becoming aware of, okay, there's more to me than just the money that I'm having. And it seemed deep and introspective. And your first chapter is on courage.
Yeah.
And this is something that I think we all need. It's super timely. You know what? It never goes out of style. Let's just put it that way, especially for women.
Right.
But I'd love to hear, like, why start with courage? And what have you done with that courage since you had that awakening at the church?
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. So I decided that I didn't want to stay in my career and that I thought I should go to school. I should put myself through college to become a social worker. And people thought I was absolutely nuts. But I started taking a class at the junior college when I was home from work. And I was it was a psychology class. And one of the first papers I wrote was about how spirituality and psychology should come together. Mm. You know, it's like, and I had no idea, like, the concept that I'd written, and I got a big A on my paper, and I was like, oh my God, right? They're buying my ideas I'm laying down. I think that was the beginning of my thought leadership. And I was like, oh.
By the way, people are still doing that.
Yeah.
Like, you were so ahead of your time. Like, that's still fresh, but keep going.
Yeah, thank you. So I quit my job and decided to put myself through college with my 401k, which I had a significant amount of money saved through the success I'd had in my career. So I went to junior college for 2 years, got my undergrad degree, and then went on to KU and got my bachelor's degree. Mm-hmm. Thought I would go on to graduate school, and I didn't get in. Like, when I applied to graduate school, even at KU, I didn't get in because I didn't have social work background experience. Right. Mm. Even though I had the human experience of my upbringing and everything about that, that was needing a social worker that I was. Right. And then my professional experience didn't count. And by the way, my joke is that sales and social work are the same. Sales just paid a hell of a lot more. Right. Oh, so it's all about, right, really listening to people and understanding what they need and trying to figure that out. So, yeah, I didn't get into graduate school. And again, I won't go into the whole story, but I had the courage to quit that job and follow a passion that I pursued, and I ended up getting my master's degree in social work So I have dual degrees and yeah, love that. But that was the first step in courage. And I write about courage because, and this is something I really admire about you, Chantel, that, you know, I think it takes great courage for us as women to tell our stories. And in the work that I support you in your work, that, you know, we always start with story. And for me, it was really important to share my story and then empower others to share that. And I do that in the TED work that I do. But I love the idea of using the courage to share your story from your heart, because courage comes from that word, right? That Greek word of the heart.
Yeah. And I think, you know, the other thing that I got from it was your relationship to, and I'm going to use the F word here.
No.
Failure.
Failure.
I personally, I'm a big fan of failure. I'm not one of those people that says there's no such thing as failure. There's
definitely
only experience.
Not.
I love that concept, but failure is when you miss the mark. I mean,
exactly.
Let's just say it. And I love your positioning of that. So tell us about your relationship to failure and why that's so important.
Because I've fallen down so many times, you know, I've made so many really not great decisions in my life.
Give us a big one. Give us a big gnarly one that we can say, yay, I feel better about myself.
Tons of drugs and alcohol all through my 20s. I had an affair with a married man that, you know, was probably one of the most, I can't really talk about it without just, I tried things that didn't work. I got myself into situations or relationships where I stayed way too long. You know, I put myself in positions to empower other people's dreams and visions and lost myself in the process.
Mm.
There's just so many, right? So many times that I journal every morning. I started journaling meditation practice years ago. And I can't tell you, the title of the book actually comes from my journal entries, because I journal, and I almost every day at the end of that, I sit with this place of like, oh God, here I am again. Here I am again, just circling, you know, circling the negative belief system, circling the negative voice that nana's in my ear all day, or circling the choices I made about what I did or didn't do, or what I said or didn't say, or, you know, just constantly, it's just constant revolution of like repatterning those thoughts and those behaviors and those ways, right? Every day is a chance to do it over again. Every day is a second chance.
Right. And yet I've known you for a while now. And it seems to me, as long as I've known you, you have been leading with the energy of I'm enough, of positive self-reflection. I mean, you're very generous with others. It's like, that's your superpower, is you see potential in others. And I think that's what makes you a great curator for the TEDx women events and a coach and a mentor and all of that. So I'm just curious to see how that failure or missed marks or repetitive patterns has helped to get you to this place. And I'm not saying you're perfect and you're done and you're not doing any more of that work. Because
right.
I get it's a constant cycling, but it seems like where you were in some of the examples in the book to where you are now, right? That they're
right.
Like flies that you're swatting versus big boulders that you have to move out. So,
yeah. And I really appreciate that you see it that way. And I think I talk about this in the book, that it's not always easy to be perceived, right, as somebody that's got it all together. And I know I carry that energy, you know, I'm a big energy, right? And I have a sense of the way I carry myself. But the reality is that I still have that little 10-year-old girl in me that, you know, watched her dad being carted out of the house and totally disassociated on the porch, right? Because I didn't know what was happening and I didn't know what to do with my life experiences. And I'm still that dutiful daughter that wants to make everything okay for my mom and my brother and my nieces. And you know, all of those pieces are still a part of me. I had this great coach once that talked to me about metaphors. And I talk about this in the book, but she helped me understand the idea of puzzles, because I never thought I fit in. Like I never thought, and I still don't. I mean, I really have to work at a room when I walk into it to be able to say I belong there and how do I fit in? Because my insides are constantly like juggling. I don't think I'm the only one that feels this way, right? You're just constantly trying to figure out. So I use strategies, and I use these strategies. I get these strategies in my book, right? Mm-hmm. I look at because I'm in a room or because I'm with somebody, how do I make this piece fit? How do I find my edge and put that with something to make a connection, to make a bigger whole? So I just think out of every failure, every lesson, every trauma, every event, I've tried to use that in some way in a positive regard. And I think now that I think about it, and this is true, I have served from those places. You know, I think of the wounds that I've had in my life. My dad attempted suicide twice when I was growing up. And so I served on the Carson J. Spencer Board for Suicide Awareness and Prevention. Whatever it is, when I wanted to get pregnant, I worked for Bright Beginnings here in Colorado and supported new moms with low incomes with babies. You know, I was a social worker for 8 years in Denver working with women with low incomes. And that helped me heal a whole bunch of childhood traumas and things that I grew up with in my own upbringing. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that answers your question, but it's, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess for me, there's definitely a thread of connection and service, very, you know, like you said in the intro, service is a big part of it. And sometimes we need to really fall down, right? And fall hard. And the way to pick ourselves up is not to get the pump out.
Exactly.
And pump up the tire again, you know, which is a lot of self-help. Like, right. Get back out there and know that you're great. And sometimes it's to serve, and the serving is such a nice, easy way. I wouldn't say it's easy, but it's like a natural way that allows us to see ourselves in reflection of others. Hello, lovely listeners. I want to pause for a moment here to make sure that you know how you can get even more access to this type of inspiration and support. Emerging Women has its own membership community, where you get teachings from incredible female leaders and coaching support directly from me, as well as other brilliant members within the Emerging Women Tribe, every month. If you are ready to go deeper into your own leadership and emerging journey, head over to emergingwomen.com for a free trial of our membership community. We've truly designed it as a hub for women like you who want to create change in the world. Don't go it alone, sisters. Head over to emergingwomen.com/membership and start your free trial today. Now, let's get back to our conversation. So, you know, that's like part of my question is, once you've failed, once you've fallen, what are some of the things that allow you to get into that space of reinvention or emergence? Because sometimes when we fall, we need to do healing work.
That's right. Right?
And it's not time to reinvent.
That's right. Or to serve. We have to do our own work before we step into that place of service.
Or to serve. Yes. So what are the things, and that's like a personal thing, and we're not here at Emerging Women to get that intimate on that level of it, but right. Knowing that that is one of the paths after you fall, right. You know, what about, like, what do you do when a fall is a sort of a stumble on the way to something that you're emerging into? Mm-hmm. What are some of the things that you've done to pick yourself up and to keep going on that thread and not just throw in the towel?
Right. Gosh, so many. My journaling practice started out of this desire to really process what was happening for me on the regular basis. And I was overwhelmed. I was in graduate school. I was pregnant and just had a lot going on. 9/11 had just happened. So I would set the alarm for like 15 minutes earlier and start journaling. And now that practice has turned into about an hour and a half every morning where I journal, I meditate, I read something positive. I try to put something positive in the world and social media, right? There's just tools that I deal with my stuff before I go anywhere else, right? I start with the Dear Christie or, oh my God, here I am again with whatever. So journaling is a huge part of my practice. I would say mindfulness in both meditation, but also practicing presence, right? Being aware that I'm aware. So practicing what I call spacious presence and getting really tapped in and realizing that I'm not alone, that my thoughts are not me. So I practice watching my thoughts so that I don't get identified with what that thought process is telling me. I've done a lot of somatic work, and I really believe in the somatic work, that the body holds the trauma, right? And that when we stay present to what we are, if we get a charge, we stay present to where it is in our body. I call it 90 seconds of insane courage in the book. That's
I have that marked here and flagged, and I want to end with that. If you could guide us through that practice.
Yeah, absolutely.
That would be really great. Yeah, I have it right here in my notes. Like, we're going to do that practice. Yeah.
Another funny, right? I think I'm hilarious. I don't know if it's like, there's so many, I come up with these things and I'm like, oh, that's so funny. And then I bring them to the world. So yeah, 90 seconds of insane courage. That really is a neuroplasticity. And we know that if you stay present for 90 seconds, you can dissolve, you know, what the emotional energy is doing in your body. Gosh, there's so many.
Well, this is a great like toolbox right here.
There's a huge toolbox.
What about the mindset? What about like, what helps you to even get into that space? Like, here you are again.
Again.
And again. And again. Because I'll tell you, a lot of us listening here have come full circle, and you know, maybe it, the impact's a little bit lesser, but how do you get into the mindset to get back into, as Brené Brown says, get back into the arena with the same pattern that keeps coming again and again?
So I have a method I created called Aspire, and I think everything starts with awareness. The A is awareness. You just have to be aware you're in your shit, you're in it, right? You've done it again, right? You're falling down, you're on the ground, you've just crashed, right? So you're aware that you're aware, right? Mm-hmm. And then you get into the space where you remember, right? That remembering space, that spacious awareness where you're like, I'm not alone in this, right? There's something here. I have faith, I have trust, I have knowing, right? And for me, that mindfulness, that spacious presence gives me the opportunity to realize I'm not alone in any of it, right? I'm always there. And then I set the intention of how I want to be in a situation versus what I want to do. And I think that's a big distinction between, you know, because when we talk about intentions, a lot of times we talk about, you know, how we want it to, what do we want to do? How's that going to show up for us? But for me, the value is, how do I want to show up? How do I want to be in that? How can I get my feeling nature to be in the feeling of what it is that I desire to do next? You know, how do I want to be when I get up off the floor after falling down for the carbon in time, right? And then really, we know this from the leadership work that we both know well, the leadership circle, right? We get the choice of being able to respond to our life versus react, right? So instead of being triggered and just going right towards that, like, here's what I did when I was 10, because my dad said blah, 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 right? You can be at a choice point when you go through that step, those steps, and get to the place of saying, how do I want to be in this situation? How do I want to react, respond versus, and then you're at choice, right? You're not caught in it. And then you experience and explore it, because life is, life is a journey. It's not a destination, right? We're all on it. We're all getting up. We're all falling down. We're all getting up again. And we're all learning and experiencing that. So.
Yes. And in your book, that you've mentioned this in different ways a couple of times, this isn't about when you say mindfulness, so you're not caught up in the emotions and you have a choice, but you're also not saying that you're bypassing the emotions, right? And you're very well educated and trained in this area of heart math, and you actually have a heart-centered, I think it's a meditation or a practice in the book. And I'd love to understand a little bit more, like, when do we regulate the emotions, and when do we actually use the emotions as, or practice emotion? I don't want to even want to use emotional intelligence, but use some of these heart practices to gain wisdom from how we're actually feeling and not be suspicious of it.
Right. Right. Well, I think resisting feeling is the number one core problem, that's not the problem, but I think it's at the root of what, in my course I teach, it's the root, the big root of all the underbelly, is we don't know how to feel. And we're so afraid of getting emotionally overwhelmed that we don't allow ourselves to be present to our feelings, right? So when we resist feeling, what happens is we just drop into all those patterns below the surface that and then we're reactive to those. Mm-hmm. Whereas if we learn how to feel, and that's what I love to say I teach people to do, is how do you feel, right? And there's a lot of science in my book about teaching people how to feel, stay present. You don't have to be afraid of being overwhelmed, right? When you first start to learn to feel, yeah, it feels pretty icky. I was just on a group right before I got on with you, and we were talking about courageous conversations. And I said, you know, every time I get into a conversation that's difficult, and I literally feel like I'm going to puke. Like I think I'm going to vomit, because it's that reactive place in me. And we talk about it in what we teach, right? And in the work, is that emotional regulation. How do you regulate your nervous system? Mm-hmm. And that's really key. So part of that is just awareness, right? Go back to aspire. You got to be aware. And then the allowance of the feeling, right? Finding it in your body and being in the allowance of being present to what it feels like in your body. Mm-hmm. Right. So at a very basic level, and absolutely, I would say 90% of the time, you can actually resolve emotional experiences in less than 90 seconds. A lot of times you can just do it by being aware to like, oh, mm-hmm. I'm pissed. Oh, you know, oh, I just got my button pushed. Mm-hmm. Right. Oh, be aware of that. And if you don't get it with just the awareness, then you have to drop into the body. And the heart, right? So what we know in heart math is that the heart has greater intelligence even than our brains. And we get very identified as our thinking, that we think we are our thoughts. We're not, right? This is a very helpful tool, I like to say, but it's not who you are, but you have to drop into all of it. So the heart has so much emotional intelligence and intelligence that when you tap into the heart and you listen to the heart and you bring in regenerative feelings of gratitude, appreciation, and love, you actually can really start to regulate your nervous system in a different way as well. So mm-hmm. heart math is all about the science of what happens when we focus on the heart, gratitude, appreciation, and love, and let the nervous system start to just calm itself down. You drop mm-hmm. out in fight or flight. You balance that. You bring coherence between the head and the heart. You balance out the heart rhythm. So there's a greater length between the heart. Heartbeats. It's called coherence. So there's a lot of science behind that too. And it's a beautiful, beautiful tool.
Yes. And I've heard so much, and I think we even have, there's a piece of equipment you can get, right? Uh-huh. That's
yeah. The M-Wave. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So anyway, that's wonderful work. And, you know, for me, it's the heart has been, when you say intelligence, the reason I react to that word, because I always think of the brain and the exactly. mind. Yeah. And when and it feels so masculine as opposed to wisdom, uh-huh. which I associate more with the heart. I mean, but the fact of the matter is, like you said, there's actually more intelligence, just to give it more heft, in the heart, and it's neurocircuitry, like we're getting information from that.
Exactly.
Is what you're saying. And I guess what I'm wondering is, how can we use that not just to regulate and calm the nervous system down? I actually want to turn it up and get a little bit more information so that I'm making my decisions from the heart, not just calming my nervous system down.
Right.
You know, because what happens is I calm my nervous system down and I go right back to the brain into my list of pros and cons, exactly. which maybe I'm calmer going into it. What should I be looking for in terms of making decisions and choices that's coming from the heart?
Yeah. So there's another technique called the heart lock-in in heart math. And the heart lock-in technique is a very simple technique. Again, it's the focusing. So can I just take you through that process?
Yes, I would love that. Please, yeah.
Please join us if you're listening too. So I just want you to close your eyes and I want you to focus on your breath. And I want you to start to regulate that breath with an in count of three. And an out breath of three. Breath of three. Out breath of three. Bringing your awareness to the area of your heart. Bringing in regenerative feelings of gratitude, appreciation, and love. Think of something that lights you up. Now I want you to propose a question to your heart, something you're pondering, something you need to know. Asking the heart what it is that it wants you to know. very simple technique. When you're ready, you can open your eyes. You want to share what your heart said? Yeah.
What it said was, when I come from a place of from the space of the feminine, that I will be more successful than I ever imagined.
The heart knows, and it's so interesting because when you practice the heart lock-in, you actually will hear the answer probably even before you ask the question. So again, technique.
You know what? That's exactly what happened to me, Christy.
I love that.
That's exactly what happened to me.
Yeah.
I didn't even get to ask the question.
Yeah.
And the answer just came. And I remember thinking, oh, the answer just came.
Yeah.
And I was going to say it, but I was like so taken by what was being said. That's amazing. Like, no joke. That's exactly what happened.
Yeah, and I can't believe you.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Love that. Oh my gosh. Such good tools here.
So I love that you said the divine feminine. Did you see the chapter in the book about divine feminine, divine masculine?
Well, yes. And you know, it's interesting because we are in an age, and I love that you're including them both. But that was nice of you. We do need that divine masculine.
There is a yin and a yang.
Yes, but right now it's like I'm a little like, I don't know that we're ready on either side for that, because first of all, the divine feminine has not been fully expressed in the world.
Right.
As you know, this is our work. Both you and I are in this work.
Yep.
And not until that happens will we see the divine masculine. So I appreciate it as a model. We're going to get there,
yeah,
no doubt, and hold the best for the masculine is such the way forward. But yeah, I feel like there's, for me personally also, there's so much work I need to do before I can even think about the whole yin yang thing,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Well, to be continued, we'll take that conversation offline. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We definitely have to continue that conversation, mm-hmm, especially since we've launched Emerging Human and we're working with a lot of men and, you know, but I feel like keeping my eye, mm-hmm, on the divine feminine, not like she needs me to, but, mm-hmm, talk about service. I feel like that's something that we're both in service to.
Yeah.
So one thing in your intro, and I love that we're going through all these practices. The book is chock full, people, of practices, little gems. And we're going to do that 90 seconds of insane courage in a second, you know, before we end. But something caught my eye because a lot of our listeners are either building businesses or they're like, I like to say they're in between successes where they've had one career and they're eyeing something else. They're in like a reinvention, or they're in an executive position and they want more meaning to their work. And you have a phrase that says that you want to amplify potential in life, not just career. And I think that's really where we're heading in terms of leadership. We do a lot of leadership development. And to me, I would love to hear you talk about that to especially the people who are looking at, they're in the executive positions and they're looking at their career, mm-hmm, and feeling like this might be a risk to, like, it's like an either or almost, mm-hmm, right? And that it can't be done until you're at a certain point in your life to be incorporating your career. Incorporating your life and career. So it's like one thing.
Yeah.
So what did you mean by that?
Well, I think a couple of things. One is, and we do this in the work that we do at Emerging Women, is, you know, we bring our whole selves to work, right? And we are really working to support women in doing that more, right? And so when people realize that they're not separate, like there's not this part of me and this part of me and this part of me and this part of me, right? Where they learn that they can show up authentically, right, as who they are in all places, that's where we get the unification of authenticity. That's where we get the connection to our whole selves, our essence, right? And so that's important, right? To recognize that. I think the other piece that I really, you know, I have this teaching I teach, but I really believe that our future is predicated on our desires. You know, we remember our past because we're very conditioned to remember our past. Mm-hmm. But I was taught, and I believe if we really align with our desires, and if your heart is asking you to do something meaningful and you're not listening to that, yeah, that is going to create more havoc in your life versus being in the flow. It's as, gosh, what's her name? Abraham says, oars up, you know, sometimes mm-hmm. you just got to get in the boat and trust that the river's taking you where it's going to take you, right? The river knows where it's going. And people get so fearful of not being in control. And they get so fearful of thinking they have to be the doer. And they think that they're so fearful of their thoughts or the way they think is the way things are. And the reality is that's not reality. The reality is that there is a flow. There's a destination for your world. There's a purpose for your life. And when you allow that to be, right? And when you, I call it aspire to your desire, right? When you get clear about what it is that your heart's calling you and you trust and you lean into that a little bit, the yeah. doors are going to open. And I can tell you from my personal experience, this is how I've lived my life since I was 25. Like I lean into what my heart, I'm heart centric. Mm-hmm. I listen to my heart. If my heart tells me I need to do something, I don't care how crazy it is. Quit a six-figure yeah. job to go to social work school, for God's sake, right? Yeah. I listen and I go.
Yeah. Well, it's so interesting because one of your chapters is why have we come to Earth? And that's where we do the remembering piece and getting our purpose, right? I don't know how you feel about like the one purpose versus multiple purposes, but this seems to call up like it's bigger than us. It's bigger than our will. It's bigger than our control.
That's right.
Right? Yeah. So tell us about how we can, when we think about why am I here? Because that is remembering and that is going in the past. Mm-hmm. Instead of being stuck in that, how can we use that practice to actually amplify our movement into the future?
Right. Well, I think that's really, you know, all of the things I talk about in the book, the courage, the heart-centeredness, the vulnerability, the remembering. You know, the remembering is about the fact that we don't always consciously remember who we are, right? We are human beings living in a really dense planet with a lot of phonetic energy, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's hard to remember that we're actually a divine being, you know, that we are here experiencing ourselves. There's so many great stories. I don't know how much time we have, but I love this book by Neil Donald Walsh. I used to read it to my little guy, Charlie, when he was little, now he's 6'5". But it's called The Little Soul on the Sun. Mm-hmm. And the little soul wanted to be the light. And God said, but you are the light. Everywhere's the light. You are the light. He said, but I want to experience myself as the light. And God's like, oh, like, you're the light. I don't know what else to tell you. Mm-hmm. And this other soul comes up and says, a girl comes up and she says, well, I will jump with you to the planet and I will be the darkness so that you can experience yourself as the light. Mm-hmm. And for me, that is such a beautiful story, right? That we have to remember, right? That we're the light, that we're the light. Mm-hmm. And it's not easy sometimes when we are, you know, and particularly when we're reflected, when the dark is reflected, right? When something comes up and we're pushed, or we fall on our face again, or we fall on our butts, or things don't turn out the way we want, or someone passes away, or, you know, life happens. It's hard to remember. And that's the practice, is to remember. Mm. Remember why you came to Earth, right? Because you jumped for a reason, my mm-hmm. opinion. You jumped for a reason.
Yeah. Well, and then all of the falling down, we pick ourselves back up for a reason.
That's right.
Right. And even if we've just done it once, kicking and screaming, we did it.
That's right.
And the more we do it, the easier it becomes. And the more that we feel brave to risk the fear and the vulnerability one more time to take that big leap. Yeah. And maybe 1,000 more times.
Or 25 gazillion time.
Yes. So I want to have time for the 60 seconds yeah. of insane courage. Will you lead us through this?
Yeah. Yeah. So 90 seconds of insane courage came when I was watching We Bought a Zoo with Matt Damon. And I was watching it. And there was a part where his son was in love with a girl. And Matt Damon said, what would you do with 20 seconds of insane courage? And he went off and told her finally that, you know, through the romance of the movie, that he really cared for her, he loved her. And then, so it made me think, how long does it really take? Like 20 seconds of insane courage, like how long would it really take for me to really be fully present to feeling something even awful, or feeling like I'm on the floor again and I, you know, whatever. And so I started playing with it and doing the research, and Jill Bolte Taylor came out with a new book recently talking about the neuroplasticity, and that we actually can process in the nervous system. And if we stay present to a feeling, so let me explain this to you. When you have a feeling, this is how I teach this. It's like the storm, right? It comes from the ground and it starts to come up. You get your button pushed, right? And if you get attached to it and you start to spiral, it's like the storm. So like the tornado spouts from the ground, it starts to come up, right? But if you get attached to the feeling, it turns into the energy of the emotion and it starts to spiral. So then we get really caught up in all the phonetic energy of like, I'm so mad, you know, all of that. When you stay present to the fact that you are aware that you're having a feeling, and you can stay present to it, which means you just allow, I am triggered. Drop into the body. Feel it. Maximum 90 seconds. It dissipates. Thinking about something that's frustrating or aggravating you, for the listeners, you know, just allow yourself to be present to the fact that you're feeling something that's annoying, or you're angry, or you're still sad about something, or you're frustrated. You know, it's a big energy, right?
Or fearful.
That's a bigger one, right?
That's a big one.
Yeah. So if you give yourself courage to stay present to it, drop it into your body, notice where you feel it, feel the fear. Allow the fear. Be present to the fear.
Nice.
This stuff works. I mean, it's, you know, it's amazing. Yeah. Our power, we have infinite power within us, infinite. Mm-hmm. We're whole, perfect, complete in the essence of our being, and we just forget, right? And we get caught up in all this external stuff, right? And the more we can bring ourselves to center, the more we can bring ourselves into this essence of who we truly are and practice that, the more we remember who we are. And when we fall down, we don't stay down as long.
Yeah. Beautiful. Thank you so much, Christy. In the show notes, if you're listening, the show notes should have a link to Christy's website, all the book information there, and get your hands on this little gem, chock full of little practices like this. I don't think any of them take more than 90 seconds, to be honest.
90 seconds, right?
Yeah, they're really quick little injections of positivity and presence.
Yeah.
And it's just been an honor to talk about this with you. Thank you so much, Christy.
I adore you and so appreciate your work in the world. So thank you. I'm honored that you asked me to play with you on this podcast today.
Yay. Blessings. More to come.
Yeah, blessings. Indeed. Take care.
Take care.
Bye.